Oak session number 14898, reel 1.
Mr. Cousins, reel 1. Could you tell me if there's any family background of military service?
Well, my father served with the Gloucester Yeomanry in Palestine in the 1418 war. And on my mother's side of the family, there were three brothers. Two of them served as gunners, and the one of them was in the Grenadiers, another one was in the Grenadiers, and this is before the 1418 war, and I understand that he was tied up in some way in education. I'm not quite certain of the facts, but I have been told he was classed as an army schoolmaster. And eventually, of course, the war started, the 1418 war started, and I'm not certain of what battalion of the Grenadiers, but he was made up to the RSM and was severely wounded. And eventually, he was living, the family home was Bristol, and he was put on a hospital train and not caring much where he went, and looked out of the window and saw Bristol Temple Meads. And he was in hospital there for some long time. And eventually he went back, whether he went back into the army or not after that, I'm not at all sure. Two others were both gunners at that time. And I have my father's younger brother. He took a commission in the Somerset Light Infantry, and about the outbreak of war, he was a second lieutenant, and at the end of the war, he was a full-blown colonel. He started off in the 4th, 6th Battalion, I think, of the Somersets, and eventually, after going to Brigade, which was the 45th Brigade, 41st Division, I beg your pardon, he went to Shafe and was there for most of the war, and he finished up, I think, in Frankfurt as head of the Field Information Agency. He was there, in, yes, Commander British Troops Frankfurt area of the US zone until March 1947. He was awarded the MBE, mentioned the dispatches, Croix de Guerre, and an American decoration, an Officer of the Legion of Merit. So that's about it. Oh, my cousin Audrey, she was at Bletchley, and she was tied up with French resistance and so forth. And as a matter of fact, she's just been over for some do, I think it was down on towards the Swiss frontier somewhere.
Do you know where in the Swiss frontier area?
I can ring her and find her out in a minute.
I think you were mentioning you had relations who were gunners. Were they regular or
hostilities? Oh, no.
Hostilities?
No, they were hostilities, yes. Mm. Yes, that was the 1914-19, except the one brother who was the RSM, the guard.
In the Grenadiers.
Grenadiers, yes.
Mm. Yeah. Did you do any sort of military training when you were at school?
No, we didn't have an OTC or anything like that. But, you know, just I was educated at Bristol Cathedral School, and life went on quite merrily and so forth, and cricket, rugby, and so on. And one didn't think much about war taking place. Most of my summer holidays and school was on the county ground at Bristol watching Hammond and Barnett. And, happy days.
I was going to ask you about when you were growing up, whether as the 1930s wore on, you became aware of the political situation in Europe.
Yes, we were aware, very much aware of it, but no one ever thought it was going to happen until, I suppose, Munich was the our first awakening to it, and I think everyone was relieved when Chamberlain came back and with his famous bit of paper. But it was only weakest hour after, when you began to realise what he'd done, and obviously that war was going, in my opinion anyway, whether war was going to come, whether we liked it or not.
Do you know whether that was a common opinion amongst your classmates at school?
I think so, generally, yes, although no one up till the end really thought it was going to happen. But I don't, when it actually did happen, I think it was possibly more of a relief than anything. Of course, by that time I'd left school.
But when did you leave school?
I left school in 1939, about May, I think it was. And I went into the provision trade, in which I continued into for the rest of my business life.
Now, right about that time, the time you'd been leaving school, they introduced compulsory military service, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Do you remember whether you thought about that, whether it would affect you?
Well, I thought it would, eventually. I mean, say, going back to 1939, I was 16. And I think, generally speaking, it people thought it wasn't a bad idea, that we'd have to do something. But, of course, these chaps were known as, I believe, the militia. And before they were discharged, war started, and they were the first in.
Do you remember if you had any ideas about how the war might be conducted before the outbreak?
I think people... I mean, say they had the idea of the Maginot Line, that the Germans would bash themselves up against that, and it would possibly be a long, hard, drawn-out struggle. Some people thought it was going to be over in 5 minutes, but I didn't. I just couldn't see exactly, once it started, how it would end.
During this time, the late 30s, when you were coming up to school, leaving, and so on, did you ever conceive of Italy as being a potential enemy?
Well, yes, and we thought that Mussolini, he was tied up with Hitler, that he would at some time or other come in, at least I did. Germany was the main thing, really.
You mentioned you went into the provision trade. Was that in Bristol itself?
It was, yes, yeah.
And later on you said you joined the Home Guard. Could you tell me about that?
Oh, yes, that was... everyone took it pretty seriously, I think. In its early days, it was a bit of a lash-up effect, but gradually they became more efficient, and it stood me in good stead when eventually I went into the army. At least I could slope arms and present arms, and knew a little bit of field craft and that sort of thing.
When did you join? Did you join in the summer of 1940 or at a later date?
Oh, well, right from the beginning in 1940, yeah. And we called at the police station and offered our services, in which we were duly informed that we would be advised. And we all assembled at a house called the Grange. And, things went on from there.
Can you remember what it was that inspired you to go to the police station?
People were told that if they're going to volunteer their services as the Home Guard, to report to the police station.
Mm. How was that conveyed? Was it on the radio or by... newspaper?
That was on, I think, if I remember, newspaper and the radio, because I think it was Anthony Eden who made this announcement of the formation of the Home Guard. But I think if it had come to a showdown, they probably would have put up a reasonable show, but it would have been absolutely hopeless. I mean, say, you look at some of these pillboxes, which you can still see, that were built around the countryside, I think they would have been absolute death traps.
So you'd have been 17 then when you went to to volunteer for the
Yes, I would be. Yes.
You say that you were sent to a place called the Grange, was a house called the Grange. What happened? What happened there?
Well, we just formed up and was there. I can't think of his name. There was a he'd been a regular soldier, I believe, who was placed in charge, I think, to organise this thing. Was sort of the commander of troops over quite a wide area, and then various people who'd had experience in the First World War were delegated to positions of responsibility.
Do you remember when you were a first issue with uniform and equipment?
Our first issue of uniform was denims and with an armband. And eventually, we were part of the Gloucesters, and we were given a Gloucester cap badge, with a back badge as well.
And did you start training from the first moment that you joined, or did it take
some
time?
Well, they started a bit of, yes, it was quite early on. It was a bit of arms drill and so forth, and even that summer, I remember, we did quite a large field exercise.
What's the field exercise realistic, as training goes?
Well, apart from, it was a bit haphazard, you know. Obviously, you know, in those early days, and we're all of them hiding behind hedges and so forth. We didn't have any arms or anything at that time, I think, and that's right. When it started, the first thing, we were manned an observation post. We had two Lee Enfield rifles and I think about five rounds of ammunition. And on completion of the night's duty, the rifles had to be returned to the police station.
Did you know how to shoot when you joined the Home Guard?
Oh, yes, we fired them quite early on, and they set up a few targets in a nearby quarry.
Besides these, the Lee Enfield rifles, did they have any? Did they have to resort to improvised weapons of any sort?
Oh, I can't remember. We eventually were given these American rifles. They came through, I think. I can't quite remember. I would say we did have weapons, but I think it was some time before they arrived.
Mm. What was the scale of duty? How often a week did you attend at the Home Guard?
Oh, about usually one night during the week and then Sunday mornings. Probably on these OP duties, they came round about once or twice a week.
And what were you looking for from the OP?
Well, it was just if anyone, you know, if there was going to be any paratroops dropped or such.
And was this actually inside the city of Bristol?
No, this was outside. I lived outside. We were in the county of Gloucester, as you see.
And did you ever see anything suspicious or...?
Never. We were called out on one occasion. Someone thought that they saw someone bailing out of a plane. And I think it probably was a bit of anti-aircraft smoke or something like that. And we toured the neighbourhood for a while trying to find someone, but nothing came to light. I well remember, too, on that occasion, the local postman getting one up the spout and putting it through the Grange window.
Was that taken as a very serious matter?
Oh, no, I don't think so.
So you carried on in the provision trade and doing your Home Guard duties. Mm. Do you remember what impact the events of 1940 had on opinion and amongst people around you?
Strangely, very, very little, really. People carried on quite normally with their lives. course, you have to be a little bit apprehensive, perhaps, as to what might happen. Because I think if he decided to come, there was very little to stop him. As I say, these pillboxes were dotted around the countryside, but and there were various bands of defence throughout the country. But I'm my opinion, I mean, say they were really hopeless, really. I can't see if you've got a tank would soon put one of these pillboxes out of action in a matter of minutes, if that.
But why was that? What was wrong with the pillboxes?
Well, I think they were absolute death traps. I mean, say they weren't... I don't know quite what shell or German tank would have had against one of these things, but my opinion, looking at them now, what came later, I mean, say they've just absolutely been blown to bits in a very short space of time. I think that from an infantry point of view, a man deployed outside would have been far more effective than anyone stuck inside one of those places.
Would that be because they were badly sighted or they were badly constructed?
No, I think it's... it was people's probably mentality at the time, I suppose, that they were put up. I don't say that they were all that badly constructed. I wouldn't know, but they were, in my opinion, a lot of them were put in the wrong place as well.
So it's bad sighting.
I think so in many, many cases. Mm. But I was going to say, you've got to take that as a nationwide thing, really. I mean, say across, right the way across the South Coast. But it's difficult to say. It may have held them up. It may have held them up for, say, a matter of days.
Do you remember if there were any invasion scares?
Oh yes, there was one. But that must have been in 41, I think. Some places, the church bells, I believe, were rung. We were, chap went round with a bugle, I think, and, when there was a general alarm, and we all assembled outside a pub, and we just waited, and then nothing happened, so we all went home again. But I believe there was a general scare throughout the country on that particular Sunday morning.
Eventually you were called up.
Yeah.
How was that done? Did you just get a letter?
I just had a letter through the post and say, you will report. When I say, and I saw Cornwall, so I thought, well, that's bad. I had a lot of connections with Cornwall, and I still do. And I just went off. I had to go in uniform as well. I had to take my home guard stuff. And straight off to Dorchester.
So you reported to Dorchester, and where were you housed there? Was there a camp?
Well, yes, there was a hutted camp at the back. It was very good, really. Very nice, glorious weather, and at that particular time. And it was a general sort of drill, sloping arms and what have you. And, of course, we were light infantry, which the drill was completely different, new as far as I was concerned, but it didn't take long before one was doing it quite automatically. And I was there for a couple of months, I suppose, and then it was discovered with a medical that I had a hernia. And off I went to Shaftesbury Military Hospital. And, of course, operations for that in those days were carried out far differently than they are today. I think I was in bed for about a month after this operation. And that place wasn't all that wonderful. The food was very poor, worse than we were having in Dorchester. And certainly wasn't an invalid diet. And Friday mornings was the CO's inspection when one sat in bed with one's chart at the slope. And I well remember you were allowed two magazines on the top of one locker, with the your hole all opened up with the knife, fork, spoon, razor, comb and lather brush, etc., and laid out neatly. And you just sat to attention in bed. And one poor bloke down the end of the ward, who'd been very ill and they'd been giving him oxygen, had just was beginning to feel a little bit better. And just this tribe, the colonel, the goodness knows who, all this tribe arrived in the ward, just as he reached forward and tried to pick up one of these magazines and upset the lot. Oh, shoot. He was almost put on a charge. Oh, shouting it went on. Poor bloke, I don't think he knew what was happening half the time. Well, from there, I went to a convalescent home at Shapwick, near Bridgewater. And it was, it was Shapwick House. And it was really heaven, man. I stayed there for the rest of the war. It was run by the Red Cross, and the food was absolutely marvellous. You waited on hand, foot and finger, and once a week we were allowed to get the bus into Bridgewater. And after that, I came down to Taunton, never thinking that I should be living in the locality then. And it was a convalescent depot in Sherford Camp, which was only a few years ago, has disappeared. And I forget now, it must have been about 6 weeks or so in there. Then when they got you back to fighting fitness, you were graded in colours. Yellow, red and blue, and then eventually you became blue and white and you were fit for discharge. And the training wasn't all that bad. When you became a blue, there was a route march every Friday for you, which took you up onto the top of the Black Downs. The RSM always led it. And up to a pub called Merry Harriers, and it was in those days a beautiful pub with settles and so forth, and we could buy a pint, and haversack rations were duly delivered to you from Fulton, which was more than on bread and cheese, but most acceptable. And then we marched on then right across the top of the Black Downs and coming down through Staple Fitzpaine back into Taunton. I suppose it was well over 20 miles, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it. And one was young and fit, and you didn't notice anything about it. And after, you could go off into town.
What did they do with you before you got to this stage, to rebuild your strength after the operation and the period of convalescence?
Well, you were in hospital for, I suppose I must have been in there about 4 weeks, I suppose. Yeah. There wasn't much done then until you got to Shapwick House. Yes. As the guy. There was, they just fed you up on some very good food, and the conditions were really lovely. Mm. And after evening meal, one walked up the road to the pub and had a pint or so, and then back again. But I think after I left, the commandant of the home, I believe it was the vicar's wife, and she tried to stop it and by saying that everyone had to be indoors by 8 o'clock because she didn't like the sight of people walking past of course we were all in hospital blue, walking past her dining room window, and she was about to have her. So the windows were left open, and everyone walked round the back of the vicarage.
But I mean, presumably before you got to the stage where you were fit to do a 20-mile March. You
yes,
they introduced you to
a little bit of PT and yes. And also a few light marches and so forth. Nothing too strenuous, from what I can remember.
So it's just it was done by stages as you went through.
Oh
the
yes,
colours.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about your medical, because you say you know it was a couple of months before they discovered you got a hernia.
But it was early on, but yes, that's right. Yeah.
Presumably you had a medical when you joined.
Yes, and that wasn't, I didn't have it then. How it arrived, I don't know. It didn't give me any discomfort and so forth. Mm. Until we had a medical one day and the MO said, yeah, you've got a hernia.
Presumably this had been caused by some aspect of the training.
It could have been. But it was just one of those things, really.
Mm. I was going to ask you about what sort of training you did, you know, in your first couple of months?
Oh, yes, well,
was
you...
Was it mainly physical?
Well, yes, it was drill, arms drill, but, Saturdays. The day used to start off usually with parade on the square, then you went back.
What time would that be?
Oh...
First parade?
From about 9 or something like that. It may have been a bit before. I really can't remember that at that time. But I remember then we used to go back and change, and it was either weapon training or that sort of stuff, and follow on Saturday mornings. There was a big parade, always with the band and so forth. And I remember afterwards we used to get back and get changed and I would do a cross-country run.
And who actually did the instruction? Was it done mainly by officers or mainly by NCOs?
Well, there was an odd officer about, but it was mainly NCOs. And there was we had two. It was a lance sergeant. I remember his name. One was Jenkins and the other Sergeant Jones, both corporals. Mm. And it was... Of course, that are part of this. We were all Cornwalls. There were Devons and Dorsets as well in this establishment.
Were these two NCOs actually from Cornwall? Were they Cornish men?
No, one was from London, and the other was from Bristol.
In your presumably you were in a recruit squad of about 30 or so.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, how
platoons.
Many, a platoon, yeah. I mean, was there were there any Cornishmen in the platoon? Or
oh, yes, very much so, yes, yes. Oh, yes, it was pretty well mixed, I would say, that, well, even the 4th and the 2nd Battalions, I would say, there was the Cornish, well, must have predominated, I suppose. But I understand that even in before the war, they did extensive recruiting in London, Bristol, and I think Birmingham as well, which was sort of their main centres of a lot of recruits.
Did everyone mix in well?
Oh, very well. Oh, yes, there was never any trouble or anything like that.
What was your relationship with the NCOs like? Was it a formal and strict relationship?
No, not at all, not at all, no. I think it probably may have been in some way. I mean, see, it was sort of, they're sort of on parade, on parade, off parade, off parade, to coin a phrase.
What about during the instruction? Was it... Was it the formal...
Oh, yes. I mean, say, they knew what they were doing, all right, it wasn't, they weren't, shall I say, they weren't nasty in any way. Yes, they were efficient.
Presumably you made a transition, the transition was easier for you because you'd been in the Home Guard, so you're used to the idea of discipline.
Yes, it wasn't all that tough, shall I say. You knew what you were doing. As long as you kept your nose clean, you were all right and did what you were told.
Now, presumably, when you arrived at Dorchester, you handed in your Home Guard uniform.
Oh, no, I wore that for it. Years. Yes,
you did?
Yeah.
But did you get issued with...
Well, I had another... I was issued with another battle dress.
Yeah.
And anklet web and all the usual paraphernalia that goes with it.
Mm. And what did you think of that? Was it comfortable and practical as a...
Oh, it was all right, apart from the question of blankoing all the wretched stuff and polishing the brasses, which, of course, it came under the eagle eye or something to see that everything was polished. But it's rather silly, really, because I remember on a scheme once in Ireland, I mean, so we didn't polish our brasses at this particular time, and I remember I think the Beds and Hearts were they polished their stuff and they were hiding positioned behind some bushes, and they absolutely sparkled. Mm-hmm. Position was given away straight away.
Looking back on it from your subsequent experience in Italy and so on, was the training you were doing at Dorchester a good preparation for fighting?
Well, I suppose in a way it was, but nothing actually prepares you or can prepare you from what it is actually like when you really start. It's a different thing altogether, really. You get some idea. I mean, say some of this training we did in Ireland, I mean, say it certainly, toughens you up. And going back to Dorchester, I was going to say, as regards training, I remember after a very short while feeling really on top of the world, feeling very, very, very fit. And I think we all were. But
what about the tactical training you were doing? Was that...
Well, that didn't come